From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the State of the Union. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Tuesday of this past week, President Joe Biden delivered his first State of the Union speech. Of course, there are varying thoughts on the president's message, and Family Research Council President Tony Perkins had his opinion on the speech as well. Here's Tony Perkins from the studios of First Liberty Institute in Dallas, Texas.
President Biden started off his first State of the Union address last night by talking about the situation in Ukraine, saying that the fearlessness, courage, and determination of the Ukrainian people, quote, inspires the world. He went on to tout his response to Russia's invasion, claiming that the U.S. and its allies are, quote, inflicting pain on Russia and supporting the people of Ukraine.
We prepared extensively and carefully. We spent months building coalitions of other freedom-loving nations in Europe and the Americas, from America to the Asian and African continents, to confront Putin. Like many of you, I spent countless hours unifying our European allies. We shared with the world in advance what we knew Putin was planning and precisely how we would try to falsify and justify his aggression. We countered Russia's lies with the truth. And now that he's acted, the free world is holding him accountable.
Well, that's certainly one way to look at it, but there may be another. Here to offer a different perspective to the president's account and two other remarks he made last night is FRC's Executive Vice President, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who spent the last 4 years of his 36-year military career serving as a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He was also one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. General, thanks so much for joining us today.
I am delighted to be with you, Tony.
So let's jump right into this in the president's response to Russia last night in the speech.
Well, it seemed to me like he was trying to take a lot of credit for some of the things that are happening, particularly the unification of Europe and even the cooperation that we're seeing within NATO. And I must tell you that I don't think that that's the case. I think it's the situation that has driven these people to a total understanding of what they're up against and how this impacts the continent of Europe. And I think it has very little to do with Joe Biden's leadership. But they are unified. They are together now. This is a good thing.
But is France more driving that unity than the U.S.?
France, Macron has visited with and called and had telephone exchanges with Vladimir Putin. And I think that France has stepped up to the plate, which I am glad to see.
Right.
I'm sorry that it wasn't our president, but I think France has stepped up. And this is a good thing that we're seeing now is because this is a European war.
Well, and America cannot go everywhere and solve every problem. But I mean, there are some that believe that America could have been a greater deterrent to what occurred. And I want to play a clip again of the president last night. And he stated this every time he speaks about this situation. Play clip number three.
Let me be clear. Our forces are not engaged and will not engage in the conflict with Russian forces in Ukraine.
So, I mean, obviously, we don't want our troops to be involved where they don't need to be. But is that something you want to signal as the United States? I mean, you're taking that off the table.
Yeah, he has a history now of telling the Russians what he will and won't do. And it is not helping this situation. When he gets up and talks about a minor incursion, if it's a minor incursion, that'll be something different. Well, what does that tell a guy like Vladimir Putin? What does that tell him? It tells him that, okay, I can probably go into the east where there's a heavy Russian population and there'll be no real response. And then he talks about how he's going to sanction him after he invades. That makes no sense. He puts sanctions on beforehand, and then if he doesn't invade, you lift the sanctions. But there's so much more that we need to do right now, not the least of which is we need to produce more oil here domestically. and wean ourselves off of Russian oil and gas.
Well, and that's something the president addressed last night, but his solution to that was not about drilling or opening back up the pipelines or creating those pipelines that he shut down, but rather opening up strategic reserves and encouraging other countries to do the same. I mean, that's not a long-term solution.
Yeah, what are strategic reserves for? You know, once you open them, once you start allowing that to be used by the consumers in the country, then you don't have a strategic reserve.
Let me ask you, as General Boykin, when you look at Putin, and I mean, this guy's been around a while, and you've been on here before, we've talked about, this has been on his to-do list for quite some time. This is not surprising, per se. Does he stop at the border of Ukraine, you know, or does he move beyond Ukraine into other European countries?
I think that's the whole point. That's the big question that NATO and the European nations need to answer. Will he stop in Ukraine? My answer is long term, no, he will not. I think if Poland or the Baltic regions would be next, Romania maybe. But I think that after a pause to regroup, I think it's only a matter of time until he's going to use those nations, and they're going to be next.
Do you think he would use nuclear weapons?
I don't think a rational Vladimir Putin would use a nuclear weapon because of the obvious consequences of it. But the question is he rational? There are a lot of that say no, that they see changes in his behavior, changes in his demeanor, changes in his action. So I'm really afraid of that. I'm afraid of two things right now. One is not just his nuclear weapons, but these thermobaric weapons that he's used. You could destroy cities in no time with those, and you kill everything in there. And we've already seen that he has a propensity to do that, and I think he's doing that now. And the other one is that he'll get bogged down in the cities there, and he'll get so frustrated that he would use a tactical nuclear weapon to try and extricate his forces out of there. That concerns me as well. So I think that we have a lot of concerns, which is actually prayer points. We need to be praying against not only this evil man, but what he could do to the Ukraine.
Could this lead to another world war?
Absolutely. I mean, how could it not? Let's just say that he did decide to use a nuclear weapon, and I think that would be the threshold. I think that would bring about a global conflict. It's certainly a hemispheric conflict. And I think we could see a global war. This could get out of control very quickly. And this has already changed the balance of power in that part of the world. And I think that it has every earmark of the beginning of a global war.
General Boykin, besides what we were talking about from a standpoint of energy independence, which is something that the Trump administration pursued and obtained, because before we were concerned about our over-reliance upon Middle Eastern oil and the Strait of Hormuz, where so much of the oil came through, made us very vulnerable. You know, we solved that problem. But here we now find ourselves yet once again in this situation where we are energy dependent. Mm-hmm. What are the other steps this administration needs to be taking?
Okay, first of all, drill at home, embargo his oil and gas so that he cannot trade, and then get a method to get materiel, lethal materiel, into the Ukrainians.
Which should become harder.
It's coming. Once they're surrounded, it's going to be much harder, and I'd like to see the plan that they're think they're going to use, because
Russia will control the airspace.
Russia will control the airspace. Russia will control everything around these cities unless they can find some way to get through the Russian lines. So that is something that there needs to be a lot of planning going into. How are we going to restore them for what they're depleting right now as they're fighting the Russians? And I got to tell you, it's in many cases, it's too little, too late. We should have done this a long time ago. You know who actually put material in there, lethal material in there, was Donald Trump.
Yeah,
he sent them lethal material.
Right. General Boykin, we're up against a break. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us here in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, it's a good, beautiful day here in Dallas, Texas. Thanks.
Nice and warm, sunny too.
You can find out more about General Jerry Boykin and FRC's view on the military when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Sticking to reading God's Word daily can be a challenge, especially when you're doing it alone. That is why you should join Family Research Council as we read through the Bible together. FRC's two-year Bible reading plan will help you stick to reading daily and go deeper into the nature of God and how His Word speaks to us in the issues of our day. The Stand on the Word reading plan takes you through the daily scripture in an engaging manner to help you stay grounded in God's truth. Wisdom comes from God, and He has given us the Bible to help us learn and apply His wisdom in our daily lives. You can start this adventure today with Family Research Council. Sign up at frc.org/Bible, and we'll text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help you prepare for conversations with your family and your friends. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
We're seeing more and more cases of censorship and the cancellation of many conservatives and Christians by big tech companies. Family Research Council has chosen to be proactive before big tech tries to censor or cancel us too. We've created a text subscription platform so that we can stay connected with you. That way, you can still find updates on faith, family, and freedom, even if big tech tries to cancel us. It's easy. Just sign up for our text alerts by texting STAND to 67742, and you'll get FRC's content straight on your phone. Again, just text STAND to 67742, and FRC will keep you looped in on issues of the day. By subscribing, you'll also get information on our upcoming events and programs. We want you to always have access to the content that will help you stand for faith, family, and freedom, and keep you connected with like-minded community. Just text STAND to 67742 and be the most informed person you know.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, at the top of the program, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and I broke down parts of the President's State of the Union address last night, during which he spoke very proudly of his administration's handling of the situation in Ukraine. That, of course, is not the only area where the president gave himself a not-so-deserved pat on the back. Here with me now to discuss some of the other parts of the president's address, as well as the situation that it continues to unfold in Ukraine, is Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. He is the vice chair of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee. He's on the Senate Appropriations Committee, the Senate Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship. He's the vice chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Tony.
Let's jump into this issue of Ukraine that has been unfolding the last week and how the administration is addressing it.
Well, I think it's interesting, right, that the first thing we did when we got back from recess in the Senate is a vote on an abortion on demand bill, basically would wipe out by federal law any restrictions of any kind on abortion. So basically, you know, abortion 6-7 months into a pregnancy when a child is viable and the like. So I just think it tells you how messed up these people's priorities are, not to mention how macabre of a bill that is to turn that into federal law. They knew it wouldn't pass, but they wanted to have the vote anyway. That said,
yeah, I want to add to that because I think it's very, very important. I talked about this yesterday on the program. What a contrast between the two parties, and it was on full display there. But yet, Senator Schumer pushed forward, as you said, knowing they didn't have the votes to pass it. But yet, it is revealing about the priorities of the two parties.
Yeah. So, you know, right now, we know the Biden administration has made a request for additional funds to provide not just for refugees, but weapons and other munitions to the Ukrainians that are bravely fighting. That should have been the first thing on the floor. We know what the plan entails. They can just put that up. We probably won't get to that until the week after next or what have you. And that's too late probably at that point. You ask about their handling of it. Look, in times of crisis like this, I always try to pull my punches simply because I don't want to sort of anybody any encouragement thinking that we're divided here. I will say we could do more. I do wish that something that Biden just won't do, because the left wing of his party won't allow him to do it, and maybe he doesn't want to do it either, and that is increase American oil and gas production.
Right.
By 2018, we produced more oil, we exported more oil than we imported, and that has now flipped around. And so even as he announces he's releasing 60 million barrels from the reserve, half of those 60 million barrels are from foreign sources. So he needs to reverse that. He won't do it, obviously, because of the Green New Deal fanatics. But that's something we could do. And I really think we need to be providing more information about troop movements and the like to Ukraine, so that they can be more effective in fighting these invaders off.
Senator, was Russia prepared for these sanctions? You know, the president talked about last night putting the squeeze on their economy. But you have to think that Vladimir Putin knew that this might be an outcome, and he was prepared for that.
So I think Putin looked at a couple things, right? He looked at the price of energy and how dependent Europe is on it. I think he viewed, for example, France as distracted by its elections, and the U.S. is not just divided politically but preoccupied with China. And he figured this is probably his last best chance to, you know, take back parts or all of Ukraine, or at least have a vassal state there and restore greater Russia, because he views himself as this great historic figure. And he knew that there'd be some economic pain. But I think he calculated this invasion would move quicker. Zelensky and the government would just abandon post and take off, and that they would be there pretty quickly and you know, take control of the country pretty quickly without much of a fight. I think he thought he'd be greeted as a liberator in many places. And I think he expected there would be sanctions, but I don't think he thought they would be as widespread as they've now become, which includes everything, you know, from, you know, obviously being cut off of the international banking system all the way to the inability to fly anywhere. I mean, they literally have no westward path to a flight, which really complicates things for them. So their economy is in free fall. I think a week from now, you're going to have a very serious crisis in the Russian economy, and I don't think he anticipated that or the resistance he's met and how badly his forces have performed in the face of it.
So, Senator, how long do you think this war could go on?
Well, I think Putin has some clear military objectives, and he's willing to kill civilians and commit war crimes to achieve them. So I think he'll push through until that happens. I think the problem he has is he can't win. He's either going to have a very bloody and protracted and costly military engagement, or he's going to have a very long quagmire occupation where the locals are going to be taking shots at him and Russians are going to be coming home dead every day. So he's his economy's in free fall because these sanctions that have been imposed aren't going away anytime soon. So he's got some real challenges right now.
Senator, I also want to get your thoughts on whether or not he stops with Ukraine. Is there the potential that he moves beyond Ukraine?
Well, I think the thing I'd keep an eye on is how far west he goes in Ukraine, because if it brings him up across that region that borders Transnistria, which is a disputed territory within that the world recognizes as being part of Moldova. So that's something to really keep an eye on. And then obviously, you know, how far west does he go? How close does he get to that Polish border, as an example? Because the further west he goes, the closer he gets to NATO troop presence, and then the more opportunity exists for that. And then there's Kaliningrad, which is this piece of Russia that's not contiguous. And the only way to supply it and get there is by driving through this corridor between Poland and Lithuania, right? Both NATO countries. So those are things I keep an eye on in the immediate future.
All right, Senator, we're up against a break. Stick around with us if you would, because I got two more questions for you. And one pertains to something I know you're passionate about. That is the country of China and what they're doing in wake of this. Folks, I'm talking to Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. He joins us again after the break. So don't go away. We come back with more Washington Watch right after this.
There is only one truth, God's truth. As Christians, we are called to align our beliefs and actions to what the Bible says is true. At Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview, our team of experts have created tools and resources to help aid in the fight for truth. These resources dive into issues including voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, and sexuality. The center serves to help Christians understand why Scripture must be authoritative and to equip believers to advance and defend their faith in the workplace in their schools, and in the public square. The Center for Biblical Worldview experts provide research and resources to help prepare believers to give a biblical answer to our culture's most pressing questions. Access these free resources at frc.org/worldview. See the Worldview Fellows' latest blogs, op-eds, interviews, and publications by signing up for the newsletter at frc.org/subscriptions.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We have reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. American men are conflicted as to what their role is in society. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of purpose as revealed in the Bible. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them on to the next generation. Get your copy of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Wednesday edition. Again, we're at First Liberty in Dallas. Appreciate all the work they do and for hosting us as well. Joining me, Marco Rubio. He is the senator from Florida, the senior senator from Florida. He's also the vice chair of the Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator, before the break, we were discussing Ukraine. We're discussing where Putin may go. Let me ask you this question. As the United States has pledged to provide material to the Ukrainian forces, we see now the tactics of Putin is encircling these major cities. Is there a plan to get that material into them if they are cut off by Russian forces?
There isn't, and it's something that the world needs to start coming to grips with, and that is he's about to stage his, looks like his plan is to impose a medieval type siege on a city, which means you basically starve people into submission. And the world has to start thinking about what options do we have to break it. Is it working through religious organizations to open up a humanitarian corridor? Is it the use of unmanned vehicles to airdrop in supplies, which was done by some non-government organizations in Syria? I'm working on a proposal that I want to present to the White House and hoping they'll consider it. But we can't just sit by and watch that happen. I mean, and I'm not claiming our options are easy and not without difficulties and even some potential complications and danger. But I think the world needs to ask itself, are we going to watch an entire city of 3 million people get starved to death?
When you look at the forces that Putin is using, and he's not been using his air power as much, is there something else at play here, or any idea in terms of U.S. intelligence trying to figure out what Putin is thinking?
Well, it's not intelligence. I think what common sense. I think the problem he has, and by our Department of Defense has put this out, is that 40% of Ukraine's air defenses are still intact, and they have Stingers and things of this nature. And so I think there's real fear on the part of these planes are expensive, and I think there's real fear on the part of Putin that to fly these things in and have them shot down. You know, they thought they were going to establish air superiority pretty quickly in this contest, and that didn't happen. And these are mobile launches, right? These are individuals out in the field. It's not like some fixed-based situation, so they're hard to track down. So I think they're just afraid to fly them and lose them. So they've been trying to degrade that with missile strikes and things of that nature, but I think that element of it has gone away for them, and so they're relying on some really destructive illegal munitions in many cases, and that's according to our own U.N. ambassador.
Final question for you, Senator Marco Rubio. This is an issue that you've been tracking and working on very closely, and in my role at U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, I've worked with you on China, their humanitarian abuses of the Uyghurs and others. Is there concern that China may be doing other things in the wake of what is happening in Ukraine?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things at play here. First of all, I think China's watching very carefully to see what happens when you invade another country or another a territory that you claim to belong to you. At its core, Russia and China are making the same argument, and that is that they are great powers and that they have a right to create vassal states, tributary states in their spheres of influence. There's also complications. I mean, China is the first to argue against separatists, whether they be in Tibet or Uyghur Muslims or Taiwan. They argue against, they're arguing always that their policy is non-interference, and yet here you have their allies in Russia targeting, supporting separatists. So I would argue that if it's okay for Putin to support Russian-speaking fake separatists in Ukraine, then why shouldn't the world support the legitimate elected government of Taiwan who doesn't want to be a part of China? Since if they're going to recognize, if they're going to support Russia's claim that these areas are independent of Ukraine, then why shouldn't the world start to consider supporting Taiwan, saying that they're independent of China? So they've got some thinking to do in that regard. All that said, I still think that if they can get away with it, China's going to try to help Russia evade sanctions without incurring sanctions of their own, and that's something we need to really keep an eye on and start thinking about how to keep that from happening.
Are we sending the right messaging when it comes to China right now with how we're handling the Ukrainian crisis?
Yeah, I think the Chinese have probably been shocked by the amount of global response to what's happened, but I also think they feel comfortable that their economy, you know, China, you know, Russia's economy, is, I think their GDP is the same as some of our states. I mean, it's a $2 trillion economy. It's the size of Italy, so it's not a big economy. China's is a much bigger economy. Our corporate class, our businesses, it's much more ingrained there than they are in Russia. And I think they feel like that economic power insulates them from some of the things that's happening to Russia right now. And if they can break that international system and create an alternative one that Russia benefits from, I think they'll really feel good about that and won't feel as limited about it.
All right. Senator Marco Rubio, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for all you provide leadership to on Capitol Hill. Faith, family, and freedom. Grateful for you.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.